Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today. And Megan, you are currently bright as fuck. What is going on with your shirt right now?
Okay, so someone anonymously sent me this fantastic shirt. It's yellow. It's got a dinosaur on it. It's kind of like every single vibe I want in the universe captured on a shirt. And I don't know who sent it, but whoever it is, I really want them to be my personal shopper.
It's a T-Rex that is blue and has headphones on. I think it's a phone listening to
also
music.
The T-Rex looks like it gives no fucks. And that's the kind of energy I'm liking right now. It's like jamming to music, giving no fucks, having a good time.
What song do you think the T-Rex is listening to on those headphones?
Definitely Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo.
Oh, that's so good. I was going to say, girls just want to have fun, especially with the yellow.
I was thinking Spice Girls. That makes me too. No, this is like a Good For You vibe going on right now.
You're
seriously, whoever sent this, thank you. I'm sure it's someone listening. So whoever you are hired for my
You are loved. You're currently spicing up Megan's life, which is important because we are
Spice Girls. Spice it up.
We are currently a little bit exhausted because we're just getting back from the Western States 100, which is going to be the topic of this episode. We're going to broaden out, even if you're not interested in Western States. It was incredibly inspiring, but also the most emotionally exhausting experience. It was close to my entire life. I mean, wedding is right up there.
You were pretty tapped out on Saturday. I was like trying to feed you. I'm like, David, you have to eat today. Yeah. Here are burritos. Here's Gatorade. Here's sustenance. You need this.
It was 12:30. It was like 12:30 p.m. After midnight. And Megan's just like, David, you have left this earth. You have left this celestial plane and are currently visiting like the Andromeda galaxy. You are nowhere near here.
But I feel like right now I have like delayed, some serious delayed onset mouth soreness going on right now. Like I like talked, smiled, laughed, like kind of got emotional throughout most of the weekend. And I feel like every single system that relies on is just flooded with creatine right now.
Yeah, you have breakdown of your tongue muscles are just like making you go to the hospital.
My CK is super high just from smiling and talking throughout
the
weekend.
You're going to have to get an IV directly into your tonsils at this point. So we got to see so many amazing people, we do know a ton of listeners to the podcast. So thank you to everyone that came up and said hi.
It was incredible. We had so many people coming up and being like, we listen to your podcast.
Yeah.
Some people said they loved it. Some people didn't say anything about
it. They said they listened to it, which is also thank you for the numbers that also helped us. But it was very cool. It was cool to think that like what we're recording right now in our kitchen goes out to a bunch of people.
Okay, talk about the running community. Like the running community is freaking amazing. And it was so cool to just like have that reminder of that fact. And also too, like I wasn't sure January, February, March that this race was even going to happen
for sure
with COVID. And here we were just like hugging everyone left and right. And like what a cool reflection of like, you know, coming past like COVID right now in the US. And it's amazing.
It was the ultimate trail running family reunion, even with people that like you had never met. And like, I can't wait to go back next year already to get to see these people and all new people. It's just incredible.
Also apologies because we were meeting so many cool people and I was like, I want to sit down and have pretty solid dinner conversations with everyone. Like let's do a live podcast with people. Let's bring in their voices. Let's hang out. This is going to be great. But I kind of felt like Dory from Finding Nemo, where I was just popping around all over the place. Like we'd be having a conversation with someone we just met and an athlete would go running by and we're like, sorry, gotta go. And like, on just like, hightail it out of there.
Yeah, we were bringing the loving energy, I think, but sometimes the loving energy was a little bit more scattered than maybe it would usually be.
So if you got some scattered roach energy, apologies. We are directing some love and good vibes right back at
you. So the reason I was personally stressed is that we had 9 athletes racing this year, including, I mean, they're all basically like our best friends. And that's kind of how we view our athletes generally, but especially with this crew. I mean,
way the lottery system worked this year, I mean, 8 of 9 of those were golden ticket entrants.
Yeah, yeah. So these are people that like, we had talked about this race plan for years. And so layering that all in was a lot emotionally for me because I cared so much about them being happy, not their results necessarily, but I just knew how connected those two things were. And the pre-race meetings were my favorite part where I got to hang out with these people that I talk to every day in their logs and just shoot the shit and talk about a little bit about the course, a little bit about life, a little bit about how much I believe in them. And it was just, I don't know. It made my, like everything in my system a little bit thrown off.
Well, it's funny because before we were going to Western States, you were like, Megan, we need to go to Target because I need to have presentable clothes for my athlete meetings. And I was like, Target? And you're like, Target.
I need to look good for this. Actually, someone came up to me and said, oh, so you're Katie's coach. And then I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, I didn't think it was you. I thought you'd be older.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, which I was like, that's actually a fantastic compliment because I'm feeling older and older by the minute right now. And so for them to say that my youthful exuberance perhaps made them think I did not have the authority I do have was pretty remarkable. And so thank you to that person. That meant a lot to me. But thinking about like recovery and all these other things, we want to make a pretty exciting announcement before we get to the race things, which is this podcast episode is brought to you by Whoop.
We need to start this by saying whoop, whoop.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we really should replace the woohoo. All right,
let's do it. 1, 2, 3. Whoop, whoop. Whoop. Perfect. So
they need an exclamation point after their name.
Of course they do.
I feel like I just insert one naturally when I start talking about Whoop.
Or like put things into the O's, like, I don't know, like smiley faces, or you could just put a nipple in each one. Either one would be great.
Well, so when we started this podcast, we were like, we are not doing commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
But
We
just talked about it on our podcast. Actually, I got a Whoop because I heard that you could journal sex. And so I was like, I am sold. Talk about a recovery device that journals sex. I am in. We talked about it in a couple podcasts. They reached out. And honestly, like, we just want to like provide athletes with like awesome tools for recovery, for training. And Whoop is one of those.
Yeah. And basically our idea here is we want to try to get discounts for people so that they can enjoy it and get the same information we get from it. You know, this gives you a lot of tools at your fingertips. I'm usually not a very data-driven person, at least in my own athletic life, and I have found that it has helped me a lot.
So. And the data is easy. I mean, talk about like it's really easy to understand, to sort through. It's an easy process to strap it on your wrist. I mean, talk about things from like heart rate variability, sleep, respiratory rate. It's, and then spitting out kind of convenient algorithms that you can get to travel, that you can get to track and like kind of just have an understanding of what your body's doing.
Yeah. So a perfect example. And we promise that every commercial we do is going to just be funny and our normal stuff. They hopefully give you information. So on the day after Western States, I woke up that morning. I'd actually slept okay. But I woke up and I had barely run the day before and my recovery score was the worst it's ever been. My HRV was through the floor, as if like I basically had such a stressful experience the day before, good stress mostly, that my body rebelled on a nervous system cellular level, but I never would have known that otherwise and would have gone out and tried to do my usual Sunday run after Western States. And it would have been super counterproductive for me. So thank you, Whoop. You saved me from myself that morning and from my own personal stress.
Well, I think for me, I often accumulate like a ton of life stressors and I kind of write them off. I'm like, oh, this doesn't matter. It's not training. I'll be fine. And it was eye-opening to me. Like when I first got the Whoop and I called it, I was like, I'm suffering from piece of shit-itis. Like I am not treating my body well. And it kind of like forced me to overhaul my sleep, thinking about my stress levels. Even like for me, I noticed if I have half a glass of wine or even just one beer, like pretty massive plummets in my HRV. Yeah. And so I think it's forced me to like fully evaluate all of those.
I love the alcohol. I've seen that in other people that have seen similar things. And for me, I found that breathing exercises are super important. So we got on the plane the other day.
Okay, you randomly throughout the day will just take these very deep inhales. And I've gotten used to it at this point. Yeah. The first day it happened, I was like, David, this is weird. Do we need to have an intervention here?
Lighten it up. So there are some very fascinating studies that you can influence your HRV through like breathing practices. So I'll do like a deep breath in for 3 or 4 seconds and then a slow out breath.
Do this about 30 times throughout the day. Is that the exact research protocol that was used?
Exactly. You're supposed to do it in such a way that it scares both your wife and your dog. If it's not making the dog get
and
startled.
Everyone, you were doing it on the, as we were traveling this weekend, like the subway train, or not the subway train, but like the, whatever the tram is at the airport. And that people are definitely looking at you like, is this guy okay?
Yeah. So, but it's actually really helped my overall recovery. I feel amazing right now in training, like to the point that I'm like, what is going on with my body? I've not been tired. Like, it's very cool. I'm not sure if it's all Whoop, but since they're sponsoring this, I'm going to say it's all Whoop.
Also, it totally like starts our morning conversation because I come downstairs. We kind of embrace in this like morning naked hug that we do every single morning. And the first thing that we ask for each other is does your Whoop think you're a piece of shit today? Or does your Whoop love you? And we kind of go from there. And that's how we start our morning conversation.
That Whoop is certainly erect at that point. I'm not sure if they're going to be sponsoring us next week. So do you want to, let's get to the, what people can do to get this stuff, right? Or do you want to say anything else about Whoop before we get there?
We can dive right into that stuff.
Perfect. So join.whoop.com/swap.
Holy crap, you crushed that.
I did. Gives you the first month free on any membership. And then if you enter the offer code SWAP, SWAP, you get 15% off your total membership.
And that can be any, we actually did a test run. It seems like you can do it with any capital. You can do all caps swap or lowercase swap, whatever it is you're choosing.
And so,
I vote all caps swap because I think it has a little more excitement. You can insert an exclamation point after it.
Well, probably shouldn't do an exclamation point. I'm sure it is not going to take special characters.
It will not take special characters, but it has a metaphorical exclamation point.
So we did look, and at checkout, it's in the bottom right, a little question. Do you have a promo code? And so we're going to get a little bit of money from this. And what we're going to do is donate it. We're not exactly sure where we're going to donate it.
I called David as we must have an organization. Yeah. We have to present something to people. But I think in reality, David and I both understand kind of how organization structures work.
Yeah.
And we really want to make sure we do due diligence to understand that this is going to an organization that's going to be on the ground and impacting people and impacting runners.
And hopefully meaningful to them. And so if you have any ideas for where that should go, let us know.
Someworkoutplay@gmail.com.
Your own organization. Yes. So it can be your own organization. But basically, we want to spread the love around as much as possible and using Whoop and the things that they're enabling us to do to help that out a little bit. So yeah, thank you, Whoop. We appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who made this possible. We never thought that this, some company that we really admire and just use on our own would be saying, hey, can we give you money? So thank you.
Can we hang out on your Tuesday morning dinner table conversation?
Yeah. Though maybe after the nipple comment, this will be the last week.
Still be our last dinner guest.
And on even more exciting news, it was Megan's birthday on Friday before the Saturday Western States.
It was so magical to get to celebrate with the Western States community. I mean, talk about being in my perfect, I'm not really a big birthday celebration sort of person.
I don't know. You like birthdays.
I like other people's birthdays and I do like my own birthday. And I'm kind of let's do an adventure. Let's do something special. But I don't necessarily need to have a massive party.
Yeah.
But it really felt like a massive party with the Western States.
Well, it was so cool. So on Thursday, the day before Megan's birthday, she had an all day research project at Western States. You'll eventually talk about that on this podcast. Very cool stuff on bone health research. But you also gave a big presentation about research and about ultra running performance in front of a packed auditorium of people. And you fucking crushed it.
Oh,
it was awesome.
You. It wasn't super. I mean, I feel like I've been in a lot of 500 people auditoriums, and this was not like that, fortunately. But it was looking into the group of people, it was so much just love and support and joy being reflected back as I presented. And I love that. But it was the first time, I mean, I've been working on my presentation skills. That's been a big thing in my life.
We have talked on the podcast about public speaking.
I don't love public speaking.
Yeah.
Not my greatest skill.
But you
seemed
cool as a cucumber for this.
I know. Well, somewhere I've gotten this mantra into my head when I go up and do these bigger presentations. Yeah. It's just talking.
Yeah, it's true.
I think it's so funny because I think my brain likes to cognitively distort this into this much bigger thing. I'm going to be standing up in front of the sea of people who are all looking at me and judging me. And it's no, in reality, people are just there eating burritos and chilling and hanging out and listening to me make jokes. And I'm just talking.
Well, hopefully not eating pork burritos before the race.
That's very
true. Top 10 at least. I have thought that same thing too. So back in the day when I did this huge presentation in Mississippi, thousands of people, I was sitting and waiting in the wings to get up there and talk. And I remember thinking about talking, being like, oh my God, talking is so complicated. Think about everything that needs to happen. All the things your tongue is doing, not a big fan. I can't form words in my head when I get like that. But then you start talking and words.
It just comes out.
It's kind of what we do.
I mean, how often do you think, sometimes I will start a sentence and have no idea where the sentence is going. And then it just magically continues.
It's the story of the podcast.
This is great. That's 100% the story of this podcast, let me tell you. But I think I've applied the same thing to running and biking too, actually.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get really stressed out kind of thinking about the complexities of workouts. Yeah. I will be thinking about mile 20 of a ride or a run at mile one.
For sure.
And just think about how daunting that's
going. It's like the anticipatory model of fatigue.
Exactly. Yeah. And my brain is just cognitively distorting it. So it's this much bigger deal than it actually is. And when you get down to it, it's really just mashing the pedals or putting one foot in front of the other. Granted, that being said, the Tour de France has had some epic and horrible bike crashes this week. So I think I fully realized with biking, I'm there, you also do have to take word of caution.
You don't want to go off a cliff. That is a little more complicated than just kind of finishing a sentence in some way that might not be perfect.
Yeah. No super talking behind cars.
Yeah, exactly. But we also rented a cruiser bike for Megan's birthday. So we got to Tahoe, didn't have an option. Megan is currently recovering from this a covert health thing that we're going to eventually talk about fully. Next week, we're putting her on the side. Yeah, it'll be awesome. Hopefully we have more answers too. So we got there and we're got to a place to rent bikes. And in the corner is this dinky little ratty bike.
It had gears that were labeled 1, 2, 3, which I haven't like biked with like labeled gears in a long time.
It had
time.
A kickstand.
And it looked like no one had ever been in gear 3.
Yeah,
it had a
yeah.
kickstand. I rode it around the parking lot and it kind of sounded like there was like a metal rock concert going on. Yeah. There just was a lot of like janging and clanging in all kinds of different directions.
It was squeaking. At the old days when I used to buy like $29.99 hotel rooms, like in Prim, Nevada, it sounded like what the people in the room next door to me were doing always.
That's exactly like how it sounded. Yeah. And it was going to be $200 for 4 days of rental. And I was like, this thing,
three days.
Actually, David, oh gosh.
3 days.
I kind of had like a mental block at this point. So we walked away from the bike shop and I was like, on principle, I just cannot do this.
I actually believe my exact words are, when did you become a bike priss, Megan? That's a great bike.
Actually, call me a bike prima donna.
I didn't call you a bike prima donna. But fortunately, this was 2 days before her birthday, so it wasn't on her birthday. And then eventually, I was able to convince you to go back, get that bike. And not only did you like the bike, you fucking shredded on that bike.
I turned out to love the bike. So I woke up the next morning. I had to get out the door at like 5:15 to go for a bike ride and just laid down the hammer on this thing. So I was on a bike path and I was that person that was like, on your left, I'm coming through. I saw Tim Tolson. He was probably like, what the heck is Megan doing out there?
Probably prepared him for the dark places he was going to go on Saturday.
Oh my gosh,
seeing you out there.
Some serious dark places. Tim crushed it out there. But it was fun.
Yeah.
And it was like, by the end of the trip, she and I were on a first name basis.
She.
All my bikes are she.
I love it.
I only ride you as
friends. Oh God damn. All right, we're gonna continue. But on her birthday, on her birthday morning, we went outside to, I'm gonna take a minute to recover from that one. We went outside to take photos of for like my Instagram. I was like making Megan take some photos at like 5 a.m. as the sun was rising on this little rental bike. And so she started going up at the start of the climb, right at the start of the escarpment at Western States. And then she just kept going up and kept going up. So I just started running beside her. Megan biked this cruiser bike up the 3 mile climb, 3.5 mile climb up the escarpment, 2000 plus feet of climbing. This world famous climb set every record on this cruiser bike for her birthday. It was one of the more remarkable human achievements I've ever seen. The only thing that potentially matches it is what I was about to see the next day at Western States, but it was remarkable.
Someone had to believe in her and we did it. And it was a lot of matching.
So you're saying the bike just needed someone to believe in her.
It needed someone to believe.
Yeah.
And we got up there and did it. It was wild. I fell off once.
Yeah,
Well, I often pace a lot of your workouts as like, I call it the bike bitch. So I'm like the bike bitch and you were my run bitch because I fell off. Did I fall off once or twice?
Once and a half.
One and a half?
Yeah.
Oh, I needed your help restarting me because it was so steep that if I didn't restart, I couldn't restart on my own without your help. And otherwise I was just gonna have to run the bike up the mountain.
I'm a grade A run bitch. I gotta be honest.
I'm hired.
Thank you. So reflections a little bit on aging, I thought was funny. So last night, Megan is now, can we say your age?
I'm 31.
She's 31. So we're a few days into her 31st year.
And you're 33 now. You're my lucky number.
Yeah. And I'll always be 733 days older than you.
And probably because I've taken a lot of rest days in my life, you're probably 1500 running days. I've taken a lot of rest days.
That's true. Also, eventually I assume that I'll be the first one to bite the dust. In which case,
I don't think so.
I think you probably stop the clock then. So then it'll be 732, 731 and so on.
I think I'm going to bite the dust on a cruiser bike. Up like progressively. Mashing on progressively harder terrain.
Let's just hope we're recording this podcast next week. But so I come upstairs yesterday and I had been down here just doing dumb David shit for like, 25
minutes. Which is like, David has a series of very elaborate couch stretching.
Yeah.
And it takes forever in the evenings. I'm like, David, it's time to go to bed. Whoop is telling me I need to be in bed at 7:30 to achieve my 8 hours of sleep because my sleep inefficiency is so poor.
I'm a prima donna with my musculoskeletal system. So I come up and I fully expect Megan to be in bed, basically conked out. And she's in the bathroom, coming out of the bathroom, looking pretty darn like just out of
Actually,
it.
Actually basically going on like an archaeological dig in my
yeah,
head.
Yeah. And so I'm like, Megan, what's going on? She's like, David, I found a gray hair. I removed it.
I removed three other hairs in the process of that one hair because I missed three times.
You have no gray hair, but you have a big bald spot.
But I did remove it. Actually, it was almost like a strange hug in some sense, though, because getting, I think this is kind of like the first gray hair I've ever seen in my head. And I think I was like, oh my gosh, this is from Western States.
Yeah.
This is from delayed onset mouth soreness of all the talking and social engagement
for sure.
at Western States. But in some sense, it was almost this strange, like, sense of relief and just being like, nothing matters.
We
all get old.
Yeah. You become a nihilist as soon as you get a gray hair.
It's great. Like, it was like incredibly exhilarating.
Yeah. I have realized I have gray eyebrows now. So
you've had gray eyebrows since you were maybe like 4.
I'm an old soul.
I think you probably had a cut there and then like white grew back in the process. Maybe that's why you've been so just like fantastic and amazing since age 4 is because of the white eyebrow hairs. Well,
thank you. I mean, whatever happens to my hair, anything would be an improvement on what I currently got going on. So bring on as much gray as humanly possible. But also, as we were riding up the bike, and Megan got to the top of the escarpment on her birthday, one of the things I always remember is getting to share that moment with you. It's really special after all this reflection and everything. But then we looked out over the mountains and got to see where the athletes were going to go the next day. And the thing that went through my head is, this is really fucking far.
That's exactly what went through my head.
In my pre-race meeting with Drew, 3:30 on Friday, Drew Holman, what he said is, David, 100 miles is a really long way.
Have you ever drove 100 miles? It takes a long time.
Yeah.
I would categorize that as a long drive.
And so that's what the athletes were going to get into. And we're going to get into their journey right now. Do you want to do this?
Hold on one second. Oh, yeah. I think it's really interesting that athletes run up the escarpment and there's tons of really beautiful photos and videos of athletes turning around and looking at the sunrise.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's the better way to turn because you're turning back towards the other side of town and not the other 97 miles you have to run after that point.
Yeah. If I had that full realization, I would probably turn off the side of a cliff because I would not be ready for it. So let's get into the whole damn race. We're going to talk about conditions, some ideas from the race start, some things from Forest Hill at the middle of the race, and then some race finish ideas. Getting a little bit of everything. We're not going to do a full like recap episode, but I think we're going to kind of hit the big topics that might have some relevance for training and life.
Let's do this.
Let's do it. So first, the conditions of the day. I looked at that forecast maybe 100 times.
Starting 10 days out. I was like, David, what is the predictive power of the 10-day weather forecast 10 days out?
You didn't even see like 100 days ago. I was on the AccuWeather long range forecasts that don't mean anything, obviously, because they're just using straight models. And I was like watching it, and at times it was like 80 degrees, and I was like, oh, this is nice. And at times it was like 106, and I'm like, oh shit, this sucks. But fortunately, all of our athletes were pretty darn heat adapted because that sunlight got that big sun in the number got to 3 digits, and it was up to 101 for the forecasted high on race morning, which not exactly pleasant conditions to run 100 mile. Honestly, not pleasant conditions to do anything in. I was pretty darn scared for people once I got the whole scope of what the weather was going to be.
Also, I think a really interesting thing about the Western States course is not a ton of shade either. Yeah. And apparently, I didn't realize this actually. I heard this from one of the athletes I coach that the shade has kind of been decimated throughout the course from a number of different like environmental reasons, some fires and things like that. And so the course has actually fundamentally changed over time as well.
And so this heat that we've had early season also got rid of whatever snow there was in the winter. So the high country, which is the first 30 miles of the race, was going to be cooler because it was starting in the morning and snow-free. So I was up there on Thursday for my run, and the conditions of the trail were awesome. So the beginning of the race, which has a lot of vert, is basically mountain running, even though you always think about that with Western States, was very fast. And then these athletes were going to go out very fast and then slowly be boiled alive.
Alive is such a good description.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because so Katie Asmuth, who we'll talk about her coming through Forest Hill at mile 62, she came through and was like, my internal organs feel like they're cooking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, that's probably a pretty accurate statement.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure your kidneys and liver right now are set to preheat for sure. 250?
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
At least 250.
You probably can make some pretty solid chocolate chip cookies, I imagine, inside those internal organs.
Yeah. Slow cook a pot roast. Certainly. And so those conditions, I think, really created a weird combo because athletes were going to pound their quads at first just to stay in the race, especially athletes that wanted to have a shot at winning. You can run into the back end of the top 10 by playing it safe. You cannot run onto the podium necessarily without putting yourself in position right off the bat. So they're going to pound their quads at first and then enter the ultimate cooking fire.
An easy bake oven.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. There's some hard baking going on out there. So the other thing we learned with the conditions is managing the heat is exceedingly important. Something we talked about with all of our athletes before, but I think we learned a lot too from seeing some of the emerging ideas of how to do this during the race.
That's a very delicate and nice way to put it. I was literally playing Harriet the Spy, like going around to different people and like top competitive crews and like, show me your heat management ways. Yeah. We were conveniently right next to Tyler Green, he went on to finish second, had a fantastic, incredible breakthrough race at Western States, but his team had the ice situation dialed.
So he was covered in white head to toe, basically every part of open skin. Coming through Forest Hill, I'm not sure how long he wore it, but he had a full ice vest on. So with cooling rods, essentially.
So they were kind of like, I don't know if anyone has seen those, like the bright blue ice packs. Yeah. And so he was, and I think there's, it's kind of a struggle because there's a trade-off between carrying the weight of that and then the coolness of it. But whatever he did.
And I'm not sure, maybe he just had it in the aid station or just through like for a little bit after, but either way, incredibly remarkable. And it also correlates with what we saw later, which is after the race, we're leaving the track at like 2 a.m. and see Tyler Green and Rachel Drake, two of the best athletes in the world. And Tyler is just totally good.
Shooting the shit, hanging in with his dog.
Being delightful. I was like, do you take a rest day today? You know, because he managed the heat so well, I think he didn't really have any of the issues that basically the rest of the competitive racers.
Meanwhile, the rest of the competitive racers were like in the fetal position.
We'll get to that.
We'll talk about that later, but it was wild.
So yeah, the heat management became a major factor. And so you have all this. We knew it was going to be absolute carnage out there. All of it turns the uncertainty meter up to 11. Because you have the heat, every single athlete is towing the line between breakthrough and breakdown the entire time. And as soon as you step 1 inch over into breakdown, race is done, or at least it's as good as done.
And I think it's so hard to calibrate that. And it's so hard to know, like, what are the variables that are sending your body 1 inch over that?
Yeah.
And for every athlete, it could be something different.
For sure.
And it could even be the difference between like one ice bandana and not even
or
having one.
Timing of the menstrual cycle. If you're just a 1 day later or 1 day sooner, the high hormone
or
phase.
Or a subclinical illness. I mean, there's just so many different things.
Yeah. And so with all that said, let's get to the race start. It went out so fast.
It went out wildly fast. We were scrolling on Twitter and like, what is going on? What is happening?
It is a new age in 100 milers and it has been for a bit. People race these from the gun now. Like, it is wild. The first 50K for both men and women would have won almost any 50K in the country. The only difference is they had 70 more miles and a firestorm ahead of them.
And And today, that's how you have to podium. Like, scared money don't make money.
And so Jim Walmsley and Hayden Hawks for men, Beth Pascal and Adi Bracey, and Claire Gallagher and others for women all went out super fast.
And that was consistent. I mean, consistent with their fitness levels.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, you have to.
And it's kind of like throwing eggs at the wall and seeing what sticks in this sort of situation. Yeah. Like, things are going to stick. Like, athletes are probably going to excel off of that strategy, just not every athlete. And it's impossible to predict on that day.
For sure. So people went out so fast. And it can be extremely dangerous to do that when you're starting to get to hot conditions. And that's kind of what happened over the next 30 miles, is that you started to hit the canyons, which, if you've never been there, are almost like reflecting zones where the heat just comes from the bottom, the side, and the top. And you can get into this situation where the air temperature might just be 90 at the time or 92, but it feels like if you had a thermometer down there, 120, 130.
It's an easy bake oven for sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, if your heart rate's a little elevated, that's going to push it 5 or 10 beats higher. And you do that and you start to hit bonk territory. You start to hit dizziness. You start to hit, like, your mental acuity suffers. And a lot of athletes started to suffer way earlier than you would have expected at a normal year. Even a normal year that was also going to be hot, but had snow to slow them down. So without the snow to slow them down, created this context where, boy, it was going to be carnage the whole time. And so that ended up happening. And when we were there at Forest Hill, we were seeing reports from the course of people just starting to really struggle. And it was it's hard to see at times.
It's pretty wild. So when you scroll on Twitter, Iron Far gives reports about how people are feeling.
Yeah.
And they're usually pretty accurate, but it's like, you know, so-and-so looking pretty rough.
Yeah.
Or like, so-and-so smiling away and looking great.
They are walking through the valley of the shadow of death and they fear evil.
Their kidneys are cooking a chocolate chip cookie right
now. Yeah. And I mean, being at Forest Hill, I totally understand why that is, because when you're that tired, you can't actually fake your external presentation to the world. And, you know, so a lot of the times athletes are bringing in other things to these events. It might be, you know, they're went out a little too hard, or it might be that they had a little bit of an illness. Like, one of our athletes, Ryan Miller, started the race sick. We knew it was going to be a tough day. And I mean, it would have been a miracle if he finished. And fortunately he didn't dig too deep of a hole. Matt Daniels faced a health issue relatively early. That was super tough. But both of them is like these incredibly valiant efforts to get where they did. And a reminder that this sport is not done on a spreadsheet, because both of those athletes on a spreadsheet were ready to compete at the top. I mean, both Drew Holman and I thought Matt Daniels could win this race.
And talk about the prediction. I mean, the Iron Far prediction contest.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Like the ultimate spreadsheet in the scenario. But I think the other thing too for women is like timing of menstrual cycle.
Yeah,
I mean, how the body responds to heat is the menstrual cycle often dictates that. Like, being in the higher hormone phase, very hard to respond to heat. And in conditions like this, it's like that may be the 1 or 2 or 3% that tips someone off.
Yeah,
and it may not be.
And we had a couple athletes.
Athletes have performed really well also in the high hormone phase of the menstrual cycle. But it's just so individual.
You have to know yourself.
For every athlete. And, you know, it may be individual by every menstrual cycle too.
Yeah, for sure. So Forest Hill, mile 62, absolutely bonkers scene.
I mean, people were lined up for 2 hours before Jim Walmsley came through, which is an hour before everyone else came through.
I tell everyone that's a fan of the sport, like, being at Forest Hill is worth it because it is like being on a climb at the Tour de France or getting to go to the Super Bowl. You just get to see everything. The sport, the real sport, the real shit happens all there. And it happens in such a way that's really spectator friendly too, because it's this long road that you can see athletes for a mile out, and you get to see the whole human experience, the life in a day, just laser focused in.
And play Harriet the Spy on other parts. Yeah. That's exactly what I was doing in the moment, which it kind of parallels how I was with a kid.
Actually, when we first got there, there was a peacock strutting down Main Street, totally without explanation. Are these wild in California? What was going on with the peacock?
Very proud of itself. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that it had some sort of prototypes on, because it was like, it was strutting, it was showing itself.
It did look efficient. I gotta be honest.
Like, I got carbon trail shoes going right now.
It's the only thing that looked even remotely as good as Jim Walmsley and Beth Pascal. I think this peacock definitely needs to be the favorite in 2022. So we're gonna have a few takeaways from Forest Hill. One, Jim Walmsley is superhuman, and
I'm not even sure he touched the ground.
Yeah. He definitely still hasn't touched. I don't think he's touched the ground since 2016. I am especially blown away because he made his training public the week of the race, which meant he was
like the night before the race.
Or it was right before.
Right around, yeah.
He must have been confident as shit to do that, because he had it private.
On Strava.
Made it public, because to him it was like, hey guys, bring it. And he brought it.
About a return to run plan.
Yeah.
He went from running 0 miles a week to running 125 miles a week with 42,000 feet of vert.
Yeah, and this was at the end of May.
I mean, what kind of human does that?
How does that work?
I mean, he must be half peacock.
Yeah, he must be. Or the peacock is half Jim. I just don't know how it's possible physically to do that. And it shows that he is an immense talent. He's immensely tough. He adapts really well. I think he's reached a level at this type of race where if anyone ever beats him, I think it will automatically be the greatest upset story ever. This will be like the U.S. beating the USSR at the 1980 Olympics, or Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson or something like that.
I agree, though it's going to happen, because Jim, he is human. He's at least some percent human. So he's going to have some sign of kind of shit that's going to happen to him, and he's going to have a bad day at some point.
Matt Daniels, if you're listening to this, we're going to get a Tilt Golden ticket and fire a Matt Daniels sized weapon directly at that next year. See what we can do. And then also on the women's side, Beth Pascal, absolutely amazing. She also came through looking fantastic.
She looked so calm, cool, collected.
Yeah.
Also, she's a doctor. She's a pediatrician.
That's so cool.
I think it's so cool. One of my athletes sent me a quote from her, and I just love this quote about kind of the balance that she's found with being a doctor and an ultra running. I think medicine is a nice counterbalance to running. When you're at work, you're not thinking about yourself. Running is largely a selfish activity. Only I benefit from running. I can justify it by telling myself I inspire people to be more active, or because it makes me a better person to be around. But the reality is, I do it for myself. We all work for a reason. It's not play. It's hard. But I find my job as stimulating as it is challenging, and I largely enjoy it. I do think that morally, I can't put running first when I'm working. I don't want to be the person who refuses to stay late when there's an emergency because I need to get my run in, or is less effective at work because I was up at 4 a.m. for a run. It's a balancing act. I hope that come the end of the summer, I'll go back to work with an even more enthusiasm.
That is so amazing. I love that quote. And I think it shows a lot. I mean, though I do think that before this race, she took a sabbatical, so perhaps not the most relevant quote in that
moment. I was going to say, I think when you talk about balancing life, it doesn't have to be an 80 or 90 hour job per week. That's kind of the pinnacle of what the body can actually feasibly balance at any sort of level.
Yeah.
And it's okay if that's filled in with other small things.
Yeah. And I think she just has a really balanced perspective, and that's so beautiful. And that sometimes,
I guess it's the chicken or the egg. Does that balanced perspective come from having this life that she's developed outside of sport, or does it come from the fact that she's probably just a freaking awesome person?
That's a great question. Beth, if you're listening, maybe
you can provide us the answer.
Maybe you can tell us. My guess is you're just an awesome person.
I think it's both.
Yeah. And then we got to see so many cool things, but the stories from our athletes were really powerful, because we got to be a part of their cruise journey and, really engage with them directly. So Drew Holman came through. At the time, he was in fifth. And it was so wild to see, because he got to be a part of his entire community that he came into running with. So Drew is an incredibly inspirational story. He did not run in college. He played ultimate frisbee at the time. Didn't start running seriously.
Not really an endurance sport. Is that an endurance sport? I'm trying to think about the dynamics of all. It's kind of a mix.
It
reminds me a little bit of soccer.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little bit like soccer, a little bit of Quidditch.
Soccer mixed with Quidditch. It's 100% ultimate frisbee.
Boom.
I've never partaken in ultimate, but I for sure watched.
He came through and got to see his entire community that he started running with. And they were all there and had seen this trajectory where I'm sure he went from someone making just funny mistakes to this superhuman that's ready to compete with the world. Though Drew was picked, I think, 16th or 17th in the pre-race prediction contest. So I think there were parts of some people that were surprised, but anyone that was paying attention, probably
he
not.
He was the Bradley of the NCAA
bracket. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember that school Bradley that, well, actually my friend Bradley picked them to like do really well. He was like, I got to pick Bradley and anyone that year.
Oh my God. I feel like Ashton would be like a similar school as Bradley. So Treeline Journal actually is a media outlet that had a great video. If you're not currently a Patreon to Treeline Journal, give them just a dollar or two. They're awesome for covering the sport. It's great to support Chase and Nikki. But they took a video there and it was cropped expertly because it just showed me looking into Drew's eyes very tenderly and saying, this moment is what we came for.
That needs to be a meme or like a GIF or something that they play when people are like having these big moments in races, because to me that was so inspiring. I was like, I'm ready to do anything for you, David. I'm called to action.
But the problem is in the full video right before, fortunately, Treeline Journal didn't post this. Drew gets dumped with water, you know, because they're dumping everyone with ice and water at all these aid stations. He gets dumped with water and I'm just trying to break the ice and I'm like, is it wrong that I'm turned on right now? which I think got Drew at least a little chuckle at Forest Hill. But it was just one of the coolest things ever to see like one of my best friends also in this moment and clearly ready to rock the rest of the course, because it was what we came for, was that moment. And it was so powerful.
And I think for me, one of the grittiest and most epic things I saw was Claire Gallagher. Yeah. So Claire, I don't even know if she's made this public yet, but kind of like hit her knee at mile 33 in the fall. And this was a knee, she was running with us back in January and fell and suffered a pretty bad contusion.
It was
on
so
that knee.
Scary.
It was so
she
scary
hit
to watch.
This hard, and it immediately swelled up like 8 times.
And I was convinced I was like, this is not good.
Claire even gave it a name. It was called Judy. You know, her
knee contusion?
Yeah, the swelling that forms around those knees, like the sac of swelling. It was Judy, and she learned to live with Judy after some time off. But fortunately, Judy had gotten better, and she was ready. You know, I thought she was going to win for sure. I mean, she was so fit. She's so ready for heat. She's so ready for everything.
She was so mentally dialed,
too. Yeah, so mentally dialed. That being said, you know, with how well Beth raced, you know, she might have been untouchable that day. But, you know, you have this thing, and that gets back to the 1 or 2 or 3% Megan is talking about. Like, even if the knee is able to get better a little bit at that point, it's really hard to not be 100% and still excel at that level. And so Claire came to Forest Hill with fire in her eyes and intent in her heart and set out ready to crush it. And then it wasn't until we saw some of the coverage in between, like at the next section going towards Cal Street, that she was like, I'm just going to have to walk it in.
And I think you really see an athlete's true character when they're wading through like the deep shit. And that's what Claire was doing. And she was inspiring other people out on the race course. Like she was instructing people to come hike with her, to come run with her throughout and just being kind of a life force out there. And she got through it and she did it. And I think to me, it's like, talk about Claire's character. And I look at her and I'm just like, I see her like, even in like, Claire to me has always been kind of this person that she's just like magical and has this like earth-raging awesome energy. Yeah. And now I see her and even in a higher light, which I didn't even think was possible because of the grit and just overall how she showed up.
It also made me realize why I would be a terrible crew. Like if I'm just the only one doing it, because I definitely would have been like, hey, Claire, let's just go like stop and go like maybe get some Chinese food or something. I just want you to be happy. So she finished and it was freaking remarkable. Katie Asmuth came through and was so full of fire and light. I was actually very curious to see how she would be at 100K, because Katie, if you have any idea of her, she is the embodiment of all that is like good in the world.
She's just such a good human.
And so she was doing that down for the road in Forest Hill and just smiling so big. And so Katie is another one. I think she was 17th in the prediction contest, and she was coming through in like third or fourth. And as we're running side by side, she looks at me and she's like, David, we're here. And I'm just like, yeah, we're here. It's time to start racing. And she's just like, yeah, it's time to go. And I was
and
like,
she proceeded to go at like 5:30 minute mile pace. And you were kind of like, hold on.
Yeah, slow down. I'm a little worried that I might have messed up part of race, though she had one of the most remarkable finishes ever, an incredible fifth place at the end. It was one of the coolest things ever.
I think one thing that's fascinating is like the juxtaposition of athlete experiences out there. So you have Katie Asmuth, and then, you know, she's just like this like fiery, energized, like just wearing her like emotions on her sleeve throughout the race. And then Stephen Kirsch, who is just this like incredible, confident, diligent athlete, just quietly chipping away out there. And it was really cool to see him move up the leaderboard and just have a like solid race throughout the entire
day.
And
he went on to finish seventh. Yeah. And he probably went into that race as a 2:12 marathoner. He's that fast, even in the midst of trail training. And, you know, but the problem is he has not been historically a wonderful heat runner. It has not been his best thing. And so he knew going in that like maybe his biggest aspirations were going to be a little tougher. And what do you do in that moment? And I am so inspired by that because I often am like, think about the negative outcomes too much. And he went out there and just thought, I'm just going to give myself the freaking chance. And not only did he give himself a chance, he's coming back next year as M7. And that's just absolutely remarkable.
I thought it was so beautiful.
And so slightly different side of the story, Sarah Kyes came through and she took off, her crew took off.
Well, first she pointed out her feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, uh-oh, this is not good. Like we should point out your feet without really any words.
And then ultra.
Uncovering like what is under here?
So her feet were very pruny, which I think is a little bit normal, but I looked at the bottom of her feet that she couldn't see.
The blisters were so bad.
The blisters were so bad. And I am not a foot expert. It was a little bit like, I don't know. And fortunately her crew was experts. We powdered air. We got some tape on there and she.
Actually, you had the expert opinion. You're like, don't dump lube on there.
Yeah. No lube on the feet. Just powder. There's enough wetness down there. And so she got up in a time when like, I would have had so much trouble thinking that getting up is a reasonable thing to do. And we're just like, well, you get a nice station. And she brought this depth of spirit and strength to that moment. She came in as a fast athlete that could add a podium on a good day and instead was having a medium to bad day given some of the issues that she was facing. And she turned that shit around and then accelerated out of there and moved all the way up the field from like 17th or something to 12th at the finish line was one of the coolest things and like inspirational things.
We were following the tracker and it was like, how is this happening now? Like we knew the backstory on her feet and it was like, how is she even moving?
It was a feat of toughness. I will never truly understand.
A feat of toughness.
Oh yeah.
Look at that.
Just synergy on every front. Kat Drew similarly had really tired quads and she got up and kept going and rallied to an amazing finish. Finishing on this day was just absolutely the coolest thing. And then Michelle Majajna came through after going through a ton of adversity over the last year and was just freaking trucking.
She was probably in 20th when we saw her at Forestall and moved all the way up to 11th. And we knew that because she was trucking along so well. It's like, she's moving up.
And then the last one might be the best one of all. So we were being interviewed and I forget, it was either for the live stream or something else. I'm not sure exactly.
It was kind of a 3-minute interview. And then all of a sudden I'm like, David, it's Sarah.
Yeah.
And we pieced the heck out of that interview and caught Sarah Bunting-Lamos, who was just crushing it.
Yeah.
And was having a tough day. Like she was like, I just puked a lot at Forest Hill and went on to rally and crush it.
Yeah. The race is like, I just want, I'll take your soul. I'll take pretty much all of your spirit and I'll take all the contents of your stomach. And in exchange, I'll give you this belt buckle. And Sarah ended up finishing 19th. Iron Far said that she was the first person not profiled in the finisher's results.
Wow.
Top 40 overall, because this was the year of women absolutely destroying the men.
Actually, can we highlight that for a second?
Yeah.
3 women in the top 10.
Yeah. And 19 in the top 40.
It was so magical to be there on the track and see these women coming in the top 10.
I thought a lot about the physiology and psychology of that, and I'm still not exactly sure whether, we haven't seen that necessarily in studies on heat adaptation. I mean, the women went out just as fast as the men. I don't know exactly. Maybe it has something to do with like the training and the buildup and the year off. I don't know exactly. But
actually, I also need to go back through and look at the percentage of drop rates in the men's elite field compared to the women's elite field.
Very cool.
Which I think would be instructive. But beyond that, just so freaking inspiring.
So, and maybe on a more broad sense, what does carnage actually look like at Forest Hill?
We saw that.
I think it's something that's important for people to think about because hundreds, in this especially, there's documentaries about it. You can see a live stream.
I think the live stream is probably super inspiring because someone's going over there projectile vomiting, colored, bodily fluids over there in the corner. And like, we're going to shift to something else. And so I think you get like 95% of the experience, but maybe the pivotal 5% of Technicolor body fluids, you're not seeing quite so much.
Yeah. It's a war movie and not the war. And I think when you get to these hundreds, like they can be rough, especially this type of race in the heat. And we saw a lot of that. I mean, there were tons of drops both before Forest Hill and at Forest Hill. And think about what causes those drops. I mean, people are getting to the finish line no matter what, usually in these cases. Like Claire had to go on a vision quest where she just walked to the finish. And, other athletes would do that too if they could. So they're not able to even do that. That's like a health concern.
I think it's really pivotal to. I think sometimes in sport and especially in ultra running, there's this mindset of we can be tough through anything. You can
death
finish
before
anything.
DNF.
Yeah, death before DNF. And it's like, no, at some point, like your kidney and liver are going to shrivel to prunes. And that is not productive long-term health performance.
Protect our kivers.
Let's protect our kivers. Our kivers are quality organs.
We'll get to it. Actually, let's talk about it right now. So, you know, before we even get to the amazing results, the drug testing tent after the finish. So, you know, the top 10 men, top 10 women all get drug tested.
Straight carnage.
And so they had to go straight from finishing to that tent. And it was one of the more eye-opening things I've ever seen, because like after a 100-degree thing where you've been racing all day and you're racing your fucking guts out, people were there just like writhing on the ground.
Some like with their heads in trash cans.
Yeah. And they weren't able to leave because they couldn't pee.
Yeah. But basically their pee samples, we were seeing these pee cups coming out and it kind of looked like these Starbucks cups. Yeah. I mean, it looked like coffee people were peeing. It was so dark.
Way darker than Coca-Cola.
Also, I'm very confused how they're actually going to drug test these samples. It's basically straight myoglobin.
Yeah. I actually photoshopped for some close friends, one of the pee samples with a Starbucks logo on it. And it looks perfect. Right?
It looks exactly like a Starbucks cup.
Like an iced coffee.
But I mean, we can make humor of that.
Yeah.
But those are actually people's insides that are cooking.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the relevant thing here is that this is fine. Like the body can adapt to this as long as you're doing the things you need to. You might need to go to urgent care after or the hospital. But as long as you're doing those things, the body is made to adapt to this. But to really respect the underlying cellular efforts that or the cellular processes that are happening in these types of efforts. Because if you don't, that's when you start to get these really negative stories about how people run into ditches. It's not usually one day. It's never one day. It's always what comes after that one day. And so the reason we're highlighting this before we get to the inspirational stuff is we want people to know, okay, put yourself out there, go really hard, but then also back off, rest, and don't go do another 100 right away, because there is shit that does happen, even when you don't necessarily see the Coca-Cola pee on TV.
And I was gonna say, I think the final instructive point too is like Western states, okay, like you have, you know, these urine samples, maybe athletes are going in and their creatine kinase is 30,000 or like some
100,000, 200,000.
And they're getting that measured, but it's like, On a smaller level, on a microcosm of this, the body is doing this on big training days too. And it's really important to respect what we're putting our bodies through. And it's like, toughness is great, but let's also listen to like all of these different body and cellular processes.
So while we talk about Jim Walmsley Strava porn that makes us all quite engorged, like the idea is like, he is probably selected partially because he adapts to those stimuli in abnormal ways and in beautiful ways, in ways that are all about human achievement, but maybe not what everyone else does. And so when we're trying to accumulate these big numbers, we're also accumulating like both micro and macro trauma that is perfectly healthy. It is perfectly healthy as long as you recover from it. Because if you don't recover from it, it just becomes self-destruction.
And I think it's perfectly healthy with an asterisk. I think there's times in which that is not perfectly healthy, and it's super important to listen to yourself and like go get the medical treatment you need.
Yeah, and now we're going
to turn. I'm putting tons of asterisks on that statement.
For sure. Definitely be comfortable going to urgent cares is what I would say. IVs are your friend if you find yourself in a Coca-Cola colored pee situation. So now we're going to get to the inspirational stuff, which is the finish line. The first thing I want to start with is Drew MF Holman coming through like absolutely wrecked around the track. Like his quads were blown.
He got to 200 meters and something went through my head. I was kind of like, I don't know if he's going to make it.
Yeah. So he was in third place, podium finish at Western States. What a breakthrough international performance, though. You know, I think we knew it was coming.
Oh, and Drew is such a boss.
Yeah. And so the problem is, his crew didn't tell him that he had a 25-minute buffer to fourth place. So Drew thought the whole time some guy was going to come up behind him and catch him before the finish. So he's just power walking his little legs out.
And power walking and doing these jog steps.
Well, because then he would start to cramp every time he tried to jog. And he looked at me at one point. And Drew and I are like best friends. We do a ton of runs together. We're really close. We know everything about each other. And he looked at me and looked straight through me.
Dave was like, I don't know if he recognized
me. I don't think he did. So he got to the finish and it was just incredible to reflect on everything.
I mean, what a beautiful moment. I mean, he's worked so hard for this.
Yeah. And then Katie Asmuth came through in fifth. And you know, as Dylan Bowman said, who's doing the amazing announcing with Corinne Malcolm.
They crushed that announcing job.
It was so good. And as he said, she made more fans than anyone else on the course. But she brought that light. And the first thing she says after getting a few tears out is, I'm coming back next year, which is a wild thing to think at that moment. I would be like,
she must have been in massive amounts of pain.
Yeah, yeah. And so after she gets off the track and we get to make eye contact, she started crying. And the thing that struck me is that I don't think they were necessarily tears of joy. I think they were tears of like, awe-inspiring, like overwhelming.
What did I just
sensation.
Go through?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This yeah, like how did this even happen? What?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that that's the coolest thing about these hundreds, you know. And then Stephen Kirsch and Drew had a bonding moment in the drug testing tent. I heard after they were just like, man, what do we do? What is this moment?
Between vomiting in buckets.
Then we got to see all the other amazing athletes come through. And then some other big reflections on the race. One, it ended up being a 66% finish rate, which is pretty low, not the lowest ever. It's remarkable how many people finished that race.
And 27% of those finishers came from the final hour.
Which so
cutting it so close. Yeah, there's actually a pretty epic video of a finisher leaning. I don't know. I was trying to think about like the physiological metrics of why an athlete is leaning this much heading into the finish line, but he had a minute to go and basically he was running, like his body was contorted to the right.
Yeah. He looked like one of those things that was outside a car dealership, you know, the flating arm or inflatable people, but with a really strong wind that was all blowing to the right. I think I heard it was an electrolyte depletion issue. I don't know exactly the mechanism of action there. But it was just incredibly inspiring. I mean, there were so many amazing athletes at the top. I mean, Brittany Peterson came through so fast, Ruth Croft, Renan Dabatz, you know, and on the men's side, Tower Green, Drew, Jim, obviously, Hayden Hawks rebounding from a tough day.
The fact that he rebounded, Tim Tolson rebounded from a tough day too.
And all of it was incredible. And then every finisher after, absolutely remarkable. And ultimately highlights the triumph of the human spirit. And so we have three final takeaways that we want to give you about Western States 100 that I think we can all apply to our lives.
The first one being that good days are earned and then bad days, that's often unlucky.
Yeah.
And we saw, I mean, we had athletes that were ready to throw down and they had unlucky days and that's just a roll of the dice.
And tons of athletes are like that.
Yeah. You know, and that's why you put yourself out there a lot. Yeah. It's because like, you're going to have good days if you put yourself out there and you're also going to have bad days too, but you're going to have good days. Yeah, that's the important thing to focus on.
Those good days are the product of years of hard work. You can't fake a good day, but bad days are the same for all of us, right? Like they always happen and they always suck and they're always going to end in a DNF and hopefully not a hospital trip at a race like this. And so give yourself grace to latch on to your very, very best day and take the bad days a little bit lightly. Learn what you need to learn, then move the fuck on and start believing in yourself. Point two, give your body a chance. This one is really highlighting Sarah Kies in particular. Like she got up when there was almost no chance that the race would go well. And not only did it go well, she was blisteringly fast on top of her blisters in the rest of the race.
Coaching is such a fun window into that because I think it shows me, I mean, we see athletes that really struggle from mile 12 to 30 and then have somehow this miraculous, joyous experience where they're crushing at mile 70 to 100.
And it's not just running. We write ourselves off in everything. Let's stop writing ourselves off. You don't know what's possible until you give yourself a chance. Yeah, it might not work out, but also it might. And that's where the beauty, that's where accomplishment, that's where all these great things can happen.
And the current trajectory doesn't have to be the final trajectory either.
Exactly.
Like just because a line is pointing one direction doesn't mean it can't fundamentally change.
Yeah, zoom out and amazing things can happen.
And the third point is don't do it alone. I mean, I think we saw the power of having crews and just like amazing friends and community. Drew Holman had community from California, Minnesota, Boulder out there cheering him on. And just like such a beautiful reflection of like the gift that he's given to the community. And I think it's really easy, I think sometimes when we're running these races to be like, no, running is a selfish
thing. Sure.
But it's truly not. And I think don't view it as a selfish act when you're out there. Like let others into that journey, to the struggle, to the celebration of it all.
And I think it's the community of ultra runners, it's the community of athletes, it's the community of humans that are all putting themselves out there in their own way. So when we're running in our little training runs, not just big races, what you're doing essentially is saying, okay, I'm vulnerable. I am this sack of meat and bones and gristle, and I'm putting myself out there and I'm going to get injured. I'm going to get Coca-Cola colored pee. I'm going to do all these other things to myself to see if I can continue growing. And in that moment, I'm sharing so much with everyone else in the world that dares to do this thing too. And so dare greatly, as Brene Brown would say, put yourself out there, go really fast in the high country, push yourself on like a hernia, do whatever, just put yourself out there, just do it in a healthy way.
Yes, please. I was going to add an asterisk to the Coca-Cola urine. Let's not do that often, please.
Yeah. Let's do that once a year, if that. Drew and I are currently talking about if we want to go back next year. We'll see.
Let's dare greatly, but be cautious with urine. How does that sound?
And let's live lots of lives in a day.
I love it.
Through that, you get to live so much life. And then, you know, all those gray hairs that we end up having are going to tell so many fucking stories if we're just willing to get vulnerable like the athletes did at the Western States 100.
Dude, I love that so much. Thanks for listening to our long podcast.
Yeah. We love you all. Rate, review, subscribe, do whatever you do. Also buy Whoop from those things because, you know, daddy need to get paid. And have an amazing day. Woohoo!
Woohoo! Bye.